Evening. My name is Brian McDonald, and it is time for Skald's Hall. Tonight, a couple of episodes of New Suspense. New episodes of New Suspense. The first one is new, of course. It is The Wit That Which Has No Name. The episode has a name. The name is That Which Has No Name. Yes, we could go on forever, but we won't. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll have Cool Air. So those are coming up right now. Sit back, relax, find somewhere where you can enjoy some spoken word entertainment here at CITR 101.9 FM.
Have you ever used or wanted to use a community lending library, collective workshop, or bike co-op? Come out to Making Space, Questioning Power and Privilege in Makerspaces on Wednesday, November 29th in the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood House from 5 to 8 p.m. to examine how power and privilege shows up in makerspaces and explore strategies that support more inclusive and equitable initiatives. Go to diversityandmakerspaces.eventbrite.ca to register for this event, and there'll be free food.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense. Located in the hinterlands between France and Spain, exists the home of the Basque people. Long believed to be the world's only direct descendants of Cro-Magnon man, the Basque are a fiercely independent seafaring folk who traveled to the four corners of the globe. With them, they took their singularly unique language and customs that were old when the Roman Empire was in its ascendancy. Among these customs is a belief encapsulated in the folk saying, "That which has a name exists." The Basque feel that by attaching a name to a place or a thing, it gains a life of its own. The belief applies to anything from a family home to the figures from their rich mythology, including the Christmas spirit Olencero and other darker creatures.
My friends, a toast to Representative Andrew J. Volstead, who made me the man I am today.
And what a man Volstead made.
You got that right, doll. 8 years ago, I didn't have two pennies to rub together. Now, I'm living it up with the swells of Beacon Hill. I hope Prohibition runs another 8 years. If it does, I'll have every inch of Beantown bought and sold.
Sounds like a peach of a future, Nathan. I hope I'm around to see it.
Play your cards right, darling, and you will be.
Oh! Wanna dance, Nathan?
Nah, but I like to watch you, Maggie. You got all the right equipment for the Charleston, so go get hot, doll.
Oh, you.
Mr. Wallace.
O'Donnell, what are you doing here?
Sorry to intrude, Mr. Wallace, but I got some news for you gotta hear.
Something that couldn't wait until tomorrow? Maybe you didn't notice, but I'm having a party, and you don't exactly blend in with such tony company.
I wouldn't have stopped by, Mr. Wallace, but it's something big. Real big. Only we might want to talk somewhere more private.
Big, huh? Okay, this way. So what is it?
Mr. Wallace, there's this Spaniard who's into us for 2 G's. A long-standing debt of his father's that we ain't gonna wait on any longer. Only, he ain't got it.
And you don't know what to do. This better not be your big news that couldn't wait, O'Donnell.
That's not it, boss. It's not that he owes us and doesn't have it. It's what he's willing to give us instead. Something worth way more than 2 G's.
What? Some family heirloom he claims is worth a fortune? A flivver that wouldn't make it to the end of the block? The deed to some hockamock swampland?
No, sir. Information.
Information?
Of the finest kind. The Spaniard claims to know a series of secret tunnels running from the harbor district all the way under the north end to Back Bay.
And he's serious?
Dead serious.
He'd better be. Or else dead is exactly what he'll end up. Okay, set up a meeting, O'Donnell. I want to see these tunnels for myself. And I want to see them tonight.
Tonight? You sure, boss?
You listen, and listen close. The Italians in the north have been using their hold on the harbor area to muscle in our operation. But if these tunnels really exist, we can run bootleg liquor right under their noses 24 hours a day. They'll be out of business within a month. And what's Esposito gonna pay his goons with after he's broke? No, Donald, I've been waiting for this opportunity to bury the Italians for 3 years now. And now that I have the means to bury them, I'm not gonna wait another day to get started shoveling. You got me?
Got it, Mr. Wallace. Aspinwall, 56403. Doyle, it's O'Donnell. Mr. Wallace and I want to go for a little drive. 1 hour, north end. Nice and quiet. Just you, me, Mr. Wallace, and a couple of torpedoes. Good. Oh, and round up some electric torches. I'll go set things up with the Spaniard.
Okay, meet you downstairs.
Everything okay, Nathan?
Maggie, I gotta go out. You keep playing the happy hostess while I'm gone. Keep the booze flowing, and they won't even notice I left.
What's going on?
Something's up.
Something big?
Big enough that I might own this city a whole lot sooner than I expected.
Nathan, what is...
Maggie.
Okay. Just be careful, lover. Come back in one piece.
You should know by now, Maggie. It's anyone who crosses me that's got to worry about staying in one piece.
I know. Still, just the same.
Look, I gotta go see a man about a dog. Goodbye, Maggie. We're right in the heart of Carmine Esposito's territory. So look sharp.
Relax, Mr. Wallace. Sean and I got Thompson's, Mick the trench gun, and all of us are packing 45s. Between us, we don't lack for heat.
O'Donnell, you sure this Spaniard's on the level?
Yeah, boss. He's screwy for sure. Always going on about joining his ancestors. But he knows better than to futz with us.
Yeah, well, he better.
This is the place, Mr. Wallace. Corner of henchmen and charter.
Mick, Sean, take a look around. Make sure this place is clean.
Right, Mr. Wallace.
Doyle, you stay with the caddy just in case we need to take it on the lam. Or in case we need to take this Spaniard for a little ride.
Got it. O'Donnell, you want to take my Tommy gun just in case?
Aye. Thanks, Doyle.
It's clean, boss. None of Esposito's boys waiting to jump us.
Good. So where's our Spaniard? I ain't got all night.
He'll be here any minute, Mr. Wallace. He was at a speakeasy a couple of blocks over when I got hold of him. Now that's him, Mr. Wallace. The Spaniard.
Good evening. My name is Aguirre, gentlemen. And I beg your pardon, but I am not Spanish. My ancestors came from Navarre, in the lands of the Basque people.
Spanish, Basque, what's the difference?
Far greater than that between your people and the hated English, I believe.
What are you, a wise guy?
Not at all. I am but a simple whaler, as the members of my family have been since long before any European walked these lands.
Whaler? What are you, a goof? There hasn't been a whaling ship out of Boston since you were in short pants.
Quite true. But I am a whaler because my family have always been whalers. Even after the ship stopped sailing and we had to take whatever dock work we could find, no matter how menial or low-paying. It is why my father ended up in debt to you. Even with both of us working, we could never do more than pay on the interest that he owed. Then your men began making threats. My father was a proud man, and the shame was more than he could bear. So he took his own life. I will soon join him.
And you're welcome to do so, but not before you give us certain information that will square your debt.
Of course not, Mr. Wallace. I will show you just what I have promised, and will thereby settle our account. Shall we?
Lead the way, Mr. Basque. And no funny stuff.
I assure you, Mr. Wallace, that there will be nothing funny about this night.
So where are we heading?
To nearby Copse Hill, where the nearest tunnel entrance is located.
Copse Hill? You mean the old town cemetery?
Yes.
So these tunnels you told O'Donnell about, how many are there?
Dozens, perhaps more. They crisscross what used to be Old Town Boston, from the harbor to the very edge of the back bay. There are entrances hidden deep under many homes built before the 19th century.
But why? And by who?
Some say smugglers from the earliest days of the Massachusetts colony. Or perhaps abolitionists helping runaway slaves flee the South.
You don't sound too convinced.
Mr. Wallace, almost every entrance is bricked very tightly shut. Only a few long-forgotten ones, such as that at Copse Hill, remain at all accessible. Such diligence would seem to imply a reason beyond smugglers or runaway slaves.
Such as?
There are tales of ghouls and other monstrous creatures lurking in darkness beneath this city. Creatures that, by night, venture forth to prey upon the dead and upon the living who are foolish enough to enter their domain.
Ha! Huh. What a load of bourgeois.
Yes. Of course it is. Nothing but old wives' tales. But you did ask, after all.
Still, you can't blame folks for believing those stories. Just look at this place.
Yeah, I half expect to see spooks behind every tombstone.
Hey, you two want to put a sock in it?
Sorry, Mr. Wallace.
Behind that stone door is the entrance we seek.
But that's a crypt?
No, it is but a facade. Inside, there is a long stairway leading deep into the bowels of the earth.
Okay, boys. Open it.
We're on it, Mr. Wallace.
Hey, what is that?
What is what?
On the door. Looked like something written there. I could see it in the moonlight for a second. Didn't look like English, though.
Oh, that. No, it is not English. It is Basque. A name.
Whew, what a stench!
This door has not been opened in more than a century. That is, until now.
smells like something died.
What did you expect, Dum-Dum? A rose garden? Think about where we are.
I know, boss, but it's not that sort of dead. It smells too new.
Lights. All right, let's go. Mick, you lead the way. Sean, you cover our backs.
Gotcha, boss.
This staircase is almost impossibly deep.
Yeah, we must be nearly 100 feet underground already.
These stairs weren't made by some monster.
No, they were carved by man. By those who serve the dark things that dwell beneath the surface.
Well, I gotta tell you, this is one swell joint you got here, Mr. Basque. Wouldn't even make a good home for a self-respecting rat.
You will find no rats here, Mr. Wallace.
No rats? The sewers are thick with them. Why not here?
You would not believe me if I were to simply tell you.
Yeah, well, try me.
All will become clear soon enough, Mr. Wallace.
So how did you come upon this information in the first place?
My family has lived in Boston for more than 200 years, Mr. Wallace. We have learned many things.
Yeah? No kidding. Maybe you've got some other tips like this one you want to share with me.
I fear not. I will not be sharing anything with anyone else once my debt to you has been paid.
Good. Because I'd hate to think you were telling anyone else about this. Like the Italians, for example. If I thought that was happening, it would be bad for your health. Real bad. You speak my language?
I understand your meaning, Mr. Wallace.
Aguirre, you said that was a name I saw written on the door.
Yes, a name. I wrote it there myself, not long after we first spoke, Mr. O'Donnell.
Hey, fellas, watch your step back there. There's bones underfoot.
Gotcha, Mick. A name? Name of what?
Something from the distant past of my people. Gueco.
Gueco? What's a Gueco?
A fearsome beast of legend that dwells in dark places. All shadow and fangs and claws. Its very name means of the night.
The tunnel splits here. Three different directions. Which way?
We should continue straight.
Continue straight? So, why would you write that on the door?
As a reminder of things that were and may yet still be.
Gueco, huh? We have something like that back home in the Emerald Isle, too.
Yeah, the Pooka. A big hairy beastie he is. He steals folks away on his back and takes them for frightening rides through the night sky before returning them to the earth.
That may be, gentlemen. But the Gueco is said to do far worse to a man than take him for a ride. And the belief in the Gueco far predates that of your Pooka.
Predates the Pooka? Why, his legends were old when the first missionaries arrived in Ireland.
There is an old saying. When God created the first man, he got the bones from a Basque graveyard. Mr. Wallace, we are a very old people. people.
More bones underfoot here. Lots of them, so be careful.
Gotcha. You hear that, Sean? Sean?
Hey, there's something funny about these bones.
Sean, you back there?
What the hell? These bones have been gnawed on.
Sean! Sean!
And not by rats, neither. By something big.
Aguirre, this is some kind of trick?
A trick?
Yeah, a trick. Like maybe you tipped off the Italians about our little midnight visit, and they're hiding in wait for us down here, looking to give us the business in private.
I can safely say that the four of us are the only living persons down here.
Oh, so it's just the four of us down here, is it? We'll see about that. Wait, you said the four of us. You mean five. You, me, Mr. Wallace, Mick, and Sean.
No, I mean four.
What's that supposed to mean? Well?
Look, maybe Sean made a wrong turn at the junction. We should go back and find him. And maybe Sean didn't make a wrong turn. If this is a double cross, first thing we do is ice Aguirre. We were going to do that anyway after he gave up the info. But we might have to do it sooner than expected.
Right, boss.
Mick, we're going back to look for Sean. You take the lead again, and keep your eyes peeled.
Right.
You must think you're pretty clever, Mr. Basque.
Why do you say that?
Getting us down here in these tunnels. Sean disappearing without a sound. This whole spook show bit about the Gueco.
Ah, so you do agree with Mr. O'Donnell?
Maybe. Maybe not. But either way, something fishy is going on.
If I am so clever, Mr. Wallace, then why am I down here with you? After all, if it is a trick, then the first thing you will do is kill me.
Because you knew we wouldn't come here without you.
That is true. And I very much needed you to come here.
So you admit it, that you're working for Esposito and this whole Gueco business is a load of malarkey?
That's not what I mean at all.
Then what?
Saints preserve us!
What the hell was that?
Something just reached out of the darkness and took Mick, plucked him up like a rag doll, and pulled him into that side tunnel.
Mick! Mick!
Mick! We have to do something. I'm going after him.
No! O'Donnell, think, man, think! Mick's dead already, so we either stick together or else we'll be joining him.
Right. Right, Mr. Wallace.
Aizina duyen guzia omenda.
What? What did you say?
In English, it would be, that which has a name exists.
What's that supposed to mean?
Just what it says. If something has a name, it exists. Like the Gueco.
What? You're telling me that's some Basque boogeyman offing my boys? You expect me to buy that story?
What you believe will become irrelevant in just a few short moments, Mr. Wallace.
Ah, bull. It's just a couple of Esposito's punks hiding in the shadows. But we're on to them, and if they think that Nathan Wallace is going to be had so easily, they're all wet. Come on, O'Donnell. Let's keep moving. O'Donnell! Sweet Jesus! It's real! It's real! And you knew! Aguirre, you knew!
Yes.
But why? Why? It's going to kill you too!
I was dead no matter what I would have done. You would have seen to that once I gave you what you wanted. But I needed to settle my father's debt before I join him. And soon, very soon, it will be settled.
You are crazy. I'm not going to just stand here and let that thing get me. I'm Nathan Wallace. No. No. No!
Now our debt is settled, Mr. Wallace. Aizina duyen guzia omenda. Aizina duyen guzia omenda!
Thank you.
So ends That Which Has a Name by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Scott Henry was Nathan Wallace. Rocky Cerda was Aguirre. Sean Hackman was O'Donnell. Catherine Kamei was Maggie. Daniel Hackman was Sean. Steve Moulton was Mick. Damon Krall was Doyle. And Dana Perry Hayes was the operator. I'm Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
University Christian Ministry is hosting a coffee house auction to fundraise for sending a volunteer team to a refugee camp in Greece. Come by for some chill tunes and baked goods. The event will take place on Thursday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Hillel House, and entry is by donation. For more information, search Greece Coffee House and Auction on Facebook. See you there.
High school is not free in Kenya, East Africa. As well as tuition fees, families must find money for uniforms, including shoes, textbooks, calculators, dictionaries, pens, pencils, and more. For poor, rural families earning the equivalent of $2 to $3 a day, this is often an impossible challenge. Will you help educate bright, very poor Kenyan youth to help them find a road out of poverty for their families? Just $50 a month will allow that to happen. Gifts of smaller amounts can be combined to give youth a chance through KEEF, the Kenya Education Endowment Fund, a registered, BC-based, volunteer-run educational charity. Tax-deductible receipts are available. Donations make great gifts for Christmas, graduation, anniversaries, promotions, etc. Gift cards are available. More information at www.kenyaeducation.org, or you can call us at 604-415-9397, day or evening.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
You ask me to explain why I am afraid of a draft of cool air. Why I shiver more than others upon entering a cold room and seem nauseated and repulsed when the chill of evening creeps through the heat of a mild autumn day. There are those who say I respond to cold as others do to a bad odor, and I am the last to deny the impression. What I will do is to relate the most horrible circumstance I ever encountered and leave it to you to judge whether or not this forms a suitable explanation of my peculiarity.
Just a minute! Can I help you?
Mrs. Gibbons?
Who wants to know?
I'm Agatha Howard. We spoke on the telephone earlier. About your room for rent?
Oh yeah! You're the writer, right?
Yes, ma'am. I work for a small magazine in Tin Pan Alley.
You must be a small magazine if you're looking for a room on this end of 14th Street.
Oh, well, I think this is a lovely brownstone. The marble and woodwork. I'd guess it dates from the 1840s. Does it, Mrs.?
Yeah, probably. Come on, I'll show you the rooms. It's up on the fourth floor. You don't mind a little walking, do you?
No, of course not.
The neighborhood may not be much to look at, but I run a respectable establishment. No callers after 8 p.m. And if you have a young man in your room, the door stays open.
Oh, I'm sure that won't be a problem, Mrs. Gibbons.
Room's fully furnished, bath just down the hallway, linens changed every Tuesday. Now, if you want meals, it's an extra fin a week. Breakfast at 7 o'clock, dinner at 6. Lunch, you're on your own. Understand?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sure that will be just fine.
Well, this is it.
Oh, it's... It's quite spacious.
You like it? Well, in that case, let's get you settled in.
Mrs. Gibbons, what's that sound?
Sound?
Yes, that sound, like a motor of some sort.
It's the gentleman upstairs, Dr. Munoz.
Dr. Munoz?
Yeah, a real live doctor, come all the way from Spain. He's been here for, oh, God, going on 10 years now.
Is he a practicing physician?
Nah, he's retired. Though he does take care of folks in the building when they need it. Won't ever accept any money for it, either. Dr. Munoz is a perfect gentleman. Kind of a weird duck, though. You know that motor sound? It's some sort of refrigeration machine and runs on ammonia, I think. At least that's what I smell when I go past his rooms.
Really? Why, whatever for? It's a very temperate spring day.
I'm not sure. It's something to do with his illness. Can't stand the heat. So he's got that big refrigeration gizmo and takes some sort of funny-smelling chemical baths.
Oh, that poor man.
Oh, but don't worry. You won't catch as much as a whiff of him down here. And Dr. Munoz is as quiet as a mouse. The motor's not that loud. You'll get used to it before you know it.
I'm sure there won't be any trouble at all.
So, you'll take the room?
Yes. Yes, I will, Mrs. Gibbons.
You won't regret it, Miss Howard. Now, let's get you settled in.
Over the following weeks, Mrs. Gibbons' assessment proved to be quite accurate. For whatever the noisome chemicals might have been used by Dr. Munoz in the treatment of his illness, I was never able to discern them amidst the myriad of other odors in the boarding house. And he was indeed most quiet. His footfalls were soft and measured, and he appeared to have no visitors other than a delivery boy who brought him groceries on occasion. The solitude in which the Spanish physician lived was an almost palpable thing. Or perhaps it simply seemed that way because it so closely mirrored my own. For just as Dr. Munoz was isolated by his unnamed malady, I found myself alone in New York through a combination of natural timorousness and the asthmatic attacks from which I suffered at frequent intervals. It was one such attack, more violent than usual, that caused me to first make the acquaintance of Dr. Munoz.
Yes? Who is it?
My name is Agatha Howard. I live just below you. I need help.
Please, come in, Miss Howard. You are having trouble breathing. Do you suffer from asthma?
Yes.
I have a draft that should be most efficacious. Please, sit, Miss Howard. Breathe this in as deeply as you can. After a few moments, it will become easier. And here, wrap yourself in this blanket to ward off the chill.
Thank you, Doctor.
Shh. Now just breathe while I take your pulse. Oh, I beg your pardon, Miss Howard. I sometimes forget how chilling my touch must be.
It's quite all right, Dr. Munoz. And besides, it is I who owe you an apology, coming at such a late hour.
No apology is necessary, Miss Howard. Illness does not consult the hands of a clock. In any event, I sleep but little. A consequence of my own ailment.
Yes, Mrs. Gibbons mentioned that you have an aversion to warmth?
No, not an aversion, Miss Howard. For I deeply miss the wave-lapped shores of my native Valencia. The sensation of the late-day sun on my cheeks. No. I do not prefer the chill of these rooms, except in comparison to the alternative.
The alternative?
Oblivion, Miss Howard. For my condition requires me to avoid sunlight entirely and to maintain temperatures not to exceed 55 degrees. And so, here I must remain.
Oh. Well, your rooms are sumptuous. You appear to have an ample library, volumes in at least a half dozen different languages. And your collection of artwork is, oh, it is most impressive. Velázquez, Murillo, and that. Oh, why, that's a Goya.
As prisons go, this is a most comfortable one. But a prison nonetheless. You appear to be a most well-educated young woman, Miss Howard. Are you an artist?
A writer. For a small magazine. I just write copy part-time. I moved here after graduation in hopes of writing for a major publication. But it hasn't worked out that way, I'm afraid.
There is no need to be embarrassed or disheartened, Miss Howard. You are young and clearly courageous to have made your home here in pursuit of your dreams.
I suppose so, Doctor. Thank you. You must have a great measure of courage yourself to have left Spain behind and come to a foreign land.
Alas, while our respective journeys have brought us both to New York, our ends are diametrically opposed. While you, Miss Howard, came here in pursuit of your dream, I sought to flee a nightmare.
A nightmare? What happened? My apologies, Dr. Munoz. That was an impolitic question.
It's quite all right, Miss Howard. The question was not impolitic, but the answer might be. Not long after the onset of my present condition, some 18 years ago, my wife passed away. After that, I wanted nothing more than to put an ocean's distance between myself and Valencia, in the hope that I could leave the memories of what had transpired behind. A vain hope, as it turned out.
Your wife? Oh, I am so sorry, Doctor.
So am I, Miss Howard. So am I. But I do thank you for your concern.
Of course, Doctor.
How are you feeling?
Much better, Dr. Munoz. Again, I am most grateful. And I apologize for disturbing you at this hour.
Not at all, Miss Howard.
Thank you, Doctor. I should like to call upon you again, if you wouldn't mind.
Mind? That would be a great delight for me. You are welcome here at any time.
Well then, until later, Dr. Munoz.
Until later, Miss Howard.
Whether my initial impulse to befriend the invalid physician was driven by pity for his plight or by my own feelings of loneliness soon became a moot point. For as frail as his body was, his intellect remained unaffected. Dr. Munoz was nothing less than brilliant, capable of conversing most eloquently on all manner of subjects: literature, politics, philosophy, the arts, the very nature of existence. And though the permeating chill of his rooms never ceased to leave me with a sense of foreboding, not wholly explainable by the readings of the thermometer, the man's gentle nature abated my fears in large measure. After some 6 weeks of nightly visitations with Dr. Munoz, I summoned sufficient courage to query the courtly Spaniard about one subject in particular, a certain medical theory that he had mentioned in passing.
Thank you.
Well, I am delighted to hear that your editor is finally recognizing your skills. You very much deserve the opportunity to write your own articles, Miss Howard.
Thank you, Dr. Munoz. Doctor, there is something I have been meaning to ask you.
My dear Miss Howard, you may ask me anything you wish to know.
Well, in a number of our conversations, you have alluded to the strength of the human will and how through properly directed concentration, virtually any malady could be overcome. You seem unusually certain that your theory is correct, Dr. Munoz.
Indeed, I am, Miss Howard. In point of fact, it is as a direct result of said theory that I am here today.
What? You mean...
Before the onset of the great illness 18 years ago, the one which led to my current state, I had been engaged in research with an esteemed colleague, Dr. Torres. I was absolutely convinced that the key to eradicating sickness was to be found in the human mind. So, we began researches that encompassed not just the latest in modern medical and psychological knowledge, but all manner of arcane lore, from pharaonic Egypt to snow-shrouded Tibet. We discovered that there were alternative means of preserving the nerves, the very body, and that therefore it might even be possible to continue existence even if the internal organs themselves were to fail. At length, I was convinced that we had discerned the key to prolonging life itself.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am most serious, Miss Howard. Our theories were soon put to the test by my own illness. Dr. Torres, although agreeing with certain of my conclusions, disagreed vehemently with other, more radical ideas. So, it was left to my beloved wife to assist me when my condition had deteriorated to an extent that left me incapable of even speaking. Thanks to her ministrations, I was able to regain the majority of my previous health, with the only side effect being my utter lack of tolerance for temperatures in excess of 55 degrees. However, the strain was too much for her, I'm afraid.
Oh, I am so sorry, Dr. Munoz. I shouldn't have brought it up.
Oh, no need to apologize, Miss Howard. Not an hour goes by that I don't think of her. And nothing that you or anyone else could say would make it more difficult. That said, I'm feeling rather more fatigued than usual this evening. Would you mind terribly if we adjourned a bit early?
No, not at all, Doctor.
Thank you, Miss Howard. You are most dear. Perhaps tomorrow we will have some news of your first assignment.
I certainly hope so.
Well, I look forward to hearing of your impending good fortune. Until tomorrow, Miss Howard.
Until tomorrow, Dr. Munoz.
Over the ensuing weeks, as we advanced further into summer, it became apparent that Dr. Munoz was slowly but unmistakably deteriorating. The livid aspect of his countenance was intensified. His voice became more hollow and indistinct. His muscular motions were less perfectly coordinated. Of this sad change, he seemed by no means unaware. A state of affairs that made his plight all the more pitiable. At the same time, I also experienced no small measure of guilt, for though our friendship continued unabated, I could not help but fear
a sense of subtle revulsion every time I stepped through his door and was met with a blast of increasingly chilled air.
Ah, Miss Howard. Please, come in.
Hello, Doctor. I was able to procure those exotic spices for you. Where would you like them?
Oh, excellent. On the table, if you please.
What is that, Dr. Munoz? Incense?
Indeed, it is. A particular Egyptian incense. Identical in formula to that found in the vaults of the Valley of Kings. Just another part of my obsession with becoming a sepulchered pharaoh. The incense used by the pharaohs was said to have certain preservative qualities. Qualities that I hope will be of benefit in regards to my own condition. I realize that the aroma must be most pungent, particularly given your asthmatic spells. This, I do most sincerely apologize.
Oh, it's not so bad. Do you think that the incense and these spices I purchased will alleviate some of your, difficulties?
Yes. I believe they will help. And, in truth, they cannot make my situation any more dire than it already is. The incense and spices, the chemical baths, they will be of some small help in the preservation of my tissues and organs. But the key is in the regulation of temperature, and I fear that I'm nearing the end of what can be done. As you have no doubt noticed, I have slowly been lowering the temperature in my rooms. As of this moment, it is 48 degrees. Eventually, I will reach a limit to what can be accomplished by means of refrigeration.
But what if we were to acquire an even more efficient refrigeration machine? One that could lower the temperatures even further?
Unfortunately, the limitation is not in the machinery, but within my own fleshly shell. At a prolonged temperature below 32 degrees, the bodily fluids themselves will freeze solid.
Oh, so how long do you have?
I am uncertain. 6 months at the very least, perhaps much longer, should my condition stabilize.
Do you think that it might stabilize over time?
It has in the past, and it may do so again. And in any event, there is little else that can be done.
Dr. Munoz, I hate to ask this, but are there any arrangements you would like me to make? I'll help in any way I can.
All of my arrangements were made 18 years ago. But I do thank you for your offer, Miss Howard.
Not at all.
But enough of these things. Please, allow me to offer you some supper. And then you can tell me of your latest good fortune in the magazine trade.
Thank you, Doctor. I would like that.
The end came in the middle of August, during a heat wave of stupefying intensity. One night, at around 3 o'clock, I was awakened by the sound of Dr. Munoz rapping frantically on the floorboards. Dressing with all haste, I rushed upstairs to find that his refrigeration machine, the one thing that stood between him and the grim specter of death, had ceased to function.
The elegant physician's condition was deteriorating rapidly, and he refused to even allow me entry. So I resolved to find a mechanic competent to repair the device and to provide Dr. Munoz with a supply of ice as a stopgap measure until repairs were effected.
Keep your shirt on. Who's there?
Mrs. Gibbons, it's me, Agatha Howard.
Sister, you better have a good reason for getting me out of my bed at this time of night.
Is there a mechanic in the building?
What?
A mechanic! Dr. Munoz's refrigeration machine has failed, and if he doesn't get it repaired soon, he could die.
Oh, well, there's Charlie Crowley. He's a car mechanic. Lives right across the hall. But he ain't gonna be too happy about getting up at 3 in the a.m.
Please, please, hurry!
What in the world? Hey, do you know what time it is?
Mr. Crowley, please, I need your help. It's a matter of life and death.
Okay, calm down. What seems to be the trouble, miss?
Dr. Munoz, on the top floor, he's a very sick man. He has this refrigeration machine, and it stopped working. Please, can you repair it?
Well, can't it wait till morning? I have to be up at 6 o'clock, so...
No! Without the device to keep him cold, Dr. Munoz will die!
All right, I'll take a look at it. Just let me grab some tools.
Thank you, Mr. Crowley.
Is Charlie gonna fix it?
Yes, he just went upstairs right now. But until the repairs are completed, I'll try to keep Dr. Munoz cool with ice. Do you know where I can find a sufficient supply?
At this hour? Well, you could try the Fulton Fish Market. Now, they keep the fish packed on ice, right? So they could probably spare a couple blocks for a good cause and should be open pretty soon, too.
Oh, that's an excellent suggestion, Mrs. Gibbons. Thank you. I'll go there right now. Oh, Mr. Crowley, is the machine working again?
The piston arm is shot, the piston itself is seized. It's going to require a complete rebuild.
What? No. No, how long will that take?
Probably half a day. I mean, I can't even start without the parts.
Well, can you get them?
What, now? It's special equipment. I can't just get it from my garage. You have to find the new piston assembly at a supply house, and even if you knew where one was, it's not going to be open for hours yet.
But Dr. Munoz doesn't have hours.
Look, I... Miss, I'm just a mechanic. I'm not a miracle worker. If you get the parts, I'll install them, but I can't make them appear out of thin air.
All right, I'll get the parts. Mrs. Gibbons, can someone go to the fish market and procure as much ice as possible?
Well...
Mrs. Gibbons, please!
I guess I can have my husband get the ice. Hiram!
I'll get back as soon as I can.
The rest of that morning was a blur of subway transfers and cab rides over the whole of Manhattan. Frantic pleas to supply house owners to open early and check their inventories. One disappointment after another. It wasn't until nearly noon that I had acquired the necessary parts and returned to the boarding house. What I found there will remain seared in my memory until the end of my days. Mrs. Gibbons? What's going on?
Oh, merciful heavens!
Dr. Munoz, is he all right?
All right? All right?
Mrs. Gibbons!
Just after you left, I sent my Hiram to the fish market like we planned. Well, he had a little trouble there. Oh, they were willing enough to give up some ice. But getting it back here was another thing altogether. But finally... Hiram was able to borrow a hand truck and brought a 50-pound block back. But when he went upstairs to Dr. Munoz, oh, merciful heavens, oh, what he saw!
What? What, Mrs. Gibbons, what did he see?
Now, he fought in the Great War, and he saw some terrible, terrible things. But this Dr. It was like he was falling all to pieces and the skin dropping right off his bones and the stench. The whole floor smelled of rot like a charnel house, and Hiram came bounding down the steps, screaming like some banshee about what he's seen, and that's all I got out of him before he bolted out the front door, and he ain't been back since. Dear God, don't go up there! Don't go up there!
What I found in Dr. Munoz's room was this. A kind of dark, slimy trail led from the open bathroom door to the hall door, and thence to the desk, where a terrible little pool had accumulated. Something was scrawled there in an awful blind hand on a piece of paper hideously smeared, as though by the very claws that traced the hurried last words. Then the trail led to the couch, where it ended unutterably. What was or had been on the couch, I cannot and dare not say. But this is what I shiveringly puzzled out on the stickily smeared paper before I drew a match and burned it to a crisp.
The end is here. No ice. The man took one look and ran away. Warmer every minute, and the tissues can't last. I fancy you know what I said about the will and the nerves, and the preserved body after the organs ceased to work. It was good theory, but couldn't keep up indefinitely. There was a gradual deterioration I had not foreseen. My wife realized it, and the shock killed her. She couldn't stand what she had to do. She had to get me in a strange, dark place. When she followed my written instructions and nursed me back, and the organs never would work again. It had to be done my way. Artificial preservation. For you see, I died that time. 18 years ago.
So ends Cool Air by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by H.P. Lovecraft. Adrian Wilkinson was Agatha Howard. Damon Krall was Dr. Munoz. Dana Perry Hayes was Mrs. Gibbons. And Christopher Duva was Charlie Crowley. I'm Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. That is all the time that we have for Scald's Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. And then at 11 on The Medicine Show, you're going to have a real treat with some live entertainment. So sit back, relax, and continue to enjoy your evening here at CITR 101.9 FM.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock.
with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say
or have a topic to share?
We have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niska from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory.
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualicum and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quichua Indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about,